One of the best ways to support the FTF podcast is to check out our Patreon over at patreon.com/finishthefight for exclusive episodes, insights, interviews, and plenty more.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome back to Finish the Fight, a gaming podcast,
where we produce and develop the highest quality gaming research in podcast form.
I am your host, Alex Kendall.
And I am your host, Derek Baker.
And today, we're bringing you one of the cult classics that I grew up with, that I truly enjoy, that is seeing a bunch of spiritual successors that are coming out, that wants this same kind of cel-shaded music, funky vibes that are coming with it. And today, we're going to be talking about Jet Set Radio.
Yeah, man. And before we hit record, this is yet another one that you and I have talked about enough offline to where I felt like we had recorded the episode, had to double check, went through the files, haven't done it. This is a very unique game. I'm excited to talk about it. I love the art style for this, and it's had such an influence, like you said, on a long list of games. So let's hop into it.
Absolutely. So Jet Set Radio, originally released in North America as Jet Grind Radio, is a 2000s action game developed by Smilebit and published by Sega for the Dreamcast. The player controls a member of a youth gang, the GGs, as they use inline skates to traverse Tokyo, spraying graffiti and evading authorities. Influence was drawn from late 1990s Japanese pop culture, such as the rhythm game Parappa the Rapper, and the anti-establishment themes in the film Fight Club. The environments were based on Tokyo shopping districts in Shibuya and Shinjuku, with graffiti designed by artists including Eric Haze. It was the first game to use a cel-shaded art style, developed in response to the team's disappointment towards Sega games mainly resembling anime or manga. Jet Set Radio received acclaim for its graphics, soundtrack, and gameplay. It won several awards and was nominated for many others. A Game Boy Advance version, developed by Vicarious Visions, was released in 2003, along with versions for Japanese mobile phones. In 2012, Jet Set Radio was digitally re-released for the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and iOS, followed by releases for Windows, PlayStation Vita, and Android. A sequel, Jet Set Radio Future, was released for the Xbox in 2002.
So let's hop over a little bit and just talk about the studio. Of course, this was published by Sega originally for the Dreamcast, but there's a lot of history into the forming and the reforming of various development within Sega. When Shun Arai joined Sega, he desired to develop a few online projects as Sega diversified into business ventures such as home banking. Arai was in charge of the Sega Saturn development tools and technical support, and as such, Sega asked Arai to develop an online game when Smilebit was founded. That title was 100 Swords, which was developed for the Dreamcast. Smilebit had about 105 employees and 6 lines of development, with a third of the staff coming from Sega PC. Smilebit was known as the premier studio for sports games. It developed the successful sports simulator series Derby Suku, Pro Yaku Team Osukuru. Non-sports titles were developed as well. Jet Set Radio was developed by former developers of Panzer Dragoon Saga, who hoped to develop something completely new and unlike the Panzer Dragoon series. A sequel was developed for Xbox, called Jet Set Radio Future, or JSRF. The team got many commendations when they went overseas to events such as E3, however, they realized that this did not necessarily mean more sales. Panzer Dragoon itself was also revived with Panzer Dragoon Orta, which, unlike the previous game, Panzer Dragoon Saga, became a regular rail shooter once again. The team hoped that by the time Orta released, the Xbox market would have matured and been more successful, for the previous two Xbox titles, JSRF and Gun Valkyrie. However, sales in the US were unsatisfying. Toshihiro Nagoshi, who later led several team members of Smilebit, commented to the studio that while they did not have high sales, the technical capabilities were very high. Smilebit was also interested in arcade development. The Typing of the Dead was initially presented to AM1, and Ollie King was originally developed under the Smilebit banner before it was released under Amusement Vision. In 2003, Sega restructured its development studios, and Amusement Vision and Smilebit merged, with the surviving Smilebit becoming solely focused on sports, adding the Virtua Striker games. At the same time, Shun Arai left Smilebit to be in charge of the Sega Creative Center. Takayuki Kawago took his place instead. Sega and Sammy merged in 2004 to form Sega Sammy Holdings, and all the studios merged back into Sega. Smilebit was named Sega Sports R&D and continued to develop more sports games, including the first Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. Takayuki Kawago continued to oversee sports games, but eventually oversaw the whole output of Sega of Japan as creative officer and then senior executive officer. The Mario and Sonic games and Sports Simulator series of games became assigned to the CS1 and CS2 designations, and a dedicated sports division ceased to exist.
Now, as Derek said, Jet Set Radio was developed by Smilebit, and the development team consisted of fewer than 25 developers, with an average age under 25. Programming and development for the game began in mid-1999. The game was announced at the 99 Tokyo Game Show and drew media attention for its cel-shaded style. During the early stages of development, director Masayoshi Kikuchi had difficulty leading the team, having no prior directing experience. The visual style was established before the gameplay. According to Kikuchi, the game could have become an adventure game or a role-playing game. His superiors were not satisfied with early concepts, and so he used trial and error to develop a concept that he believed everyone would find interesting. Ueda wanted to create something cool that dealt with pop culture and was completely unlike the team's previous game, the 1998 role-playing game Panzer Dragoon Saga. Ueda's drawings of a punky character with headphones and rollerblades became the foundation of the game. He had joined Sega after being impressed by the freshness and international appeal of Sonic the Hedgehog, but was disappointed with the number of manga and anime-style designs. He hoped to create something original. Smilebit drew inspiration from games outside the typical game genres of science fiction and fantasy. Ueda was particularly inspired by a demonstration of the PlayStation rhythm game, Parappa the Rapper, at the 96 Tokyo Game Show, quoted saying, "I think that's the first game with pop culture like that. They did it first. After that, I decided to make a true game, not just a visual experience that was actually for adults." The anti-establishment themes of Fight Club were obviously, as we had said, another major influence on the game.
Smilebit used thicker lines for objects they wanted to stand out. Smilebit developed a new cel-shading technique not used at the time, as it would not have been possible on the Dreamcast or PlayStation 2. The game features graffiti by a variety of artists, including Eric Haze, who had designed album art for acts including the Beastie Boys and Public Enemy. Smilebit initially wanted to make it a skateboarding game, but was scrapped due to the legs having to be fixed and instead chose inline skates. Jet Set Radio was one of the earliest games to feature an open 3D world, which presented the team's biggest challenge. Kikuchi said, "Making an entire town in the game was quite the prospect. It's not hard with modern high-spec hardware, but that wasn't the case back then. It was very difficult from a programming standpoint." Another Sega game developed in that period, Shenmue in 1999, also featured an open world, but Kikuchi felt the games posed different technical challenges, as Shenmue does not allow the player to jump or move at speed. The team implemented grinding to allow players to enjoy speed without worrying about colliding with obstacles. Smilebit chose to have a fixed camera as an attempt to reduce motion sickness. They attempted to make the game impossible to duplicate on PS2 by pushing the Dreamcast limitations using bright colors, realistic shadows, and more than 16 NPCs on screen without lag that would have been impossible on PS2 due to its smaller memory.
The settings were inspired by Japanese locations such as the Tokyo shopping districts of Shibuya and Shinjuku, which Smilebit photographed to use as references. Sega feared that the game's style might alienate players outside Japan and requested changes for the international versions. The team added stages modeled after New York City, one based on Times Square, and another on Roosevelt Avenue along Queens and Brooklyn, and changed the nationality of two characters to American. The interactive credit sequence of the Japanese version was also cut, as localizing it would have meant rebuilding the stage with English names. Sega sold the international version in Japan as De La Jet Set Radio. Ueda was unhappy about the changes, which he felt diminished the essential Japanese elements of the game.
So let's talk about the gameplay. The player controls a member of a gang of graffiti-tagging inline skaters. The game consists of three types of levels: street, rival showdown, and trial. The street levels come in two categories. The first is to tag every graffiti point in each area previously tagged by a rival gang before the timer runs out, while evading the authorities. The second category serves as a boss battle by chasing the rival gang members and spraying graffiti on them. The more graffiti points are sprayed, the more deadly the authorities become. Graffiti points are marked by arrows and require paint to tag them. Players can spray graffiti by either pressing a single button or inputting commands using the analog stick, depending on the size of the graffiti spot. If players run out of paint, they must refill their supply by obtaining yellow and blue spray cans scattered across the stage. Yellow spray cans refill a single spray can, and blue spray cans refill 5. Enemies will pursue players and attempt to deplete their health. Health can be replenished by obtaining red and green spray cans. Performing tricks add bonus points to the player's overall score and gain access to areas difficult to reach. In rival showdown levels, more playable characters can be unlocked after they are defeated by matching the rival's movements in technique sections or by spraying graffiti before the rival in race sections. Trial levels are unlocked after street and rival showdown levels are cleared in a specific area. There are three kinds of trials: Jet Graffiti, Jet Tech, and Jet Crash. In Jet Graffiti, the objective is to spray all the graffiti points within the time limit. Jet Tech prioritizes obtaining the top score within the time limit. In Jet Crash, the objective is to reach the goal and spray graffiti on it before the opponent. Players can customize their graffiti by choosing presets or create their own using the graffiti editor. By using a VMU, players can upload their graffiti to the official website for other players to use or download graffiti from other players. More graffiti presets can be unlocked by collecting graffiti soul icons scattered throughout stages.
Now, surprisingly, a game like this does have a bit of story to go along with, like, the kind of overall fun gameplay and talk about the different gangs of the area. So the story starts with DJ Professor K broadcasting the Jet Set Radio pirate radio station to gangs of youths who roam Tokyo-to, skating and spraying graffiti. One gang, the GGs, competes for turf with the all-female Love Shockers in the shopping district of Shibuya-cho, the cyborg noise tanks in the Benton Entertainment District, and the kaiju-loving Poison Jam in the Kogane Dockyard. The authorities, led by Captain Onishima, pursue the gang with riot police and military armaments. After the GGs defeat Poison Jam, Noise Tanks, and Love Shockers in Turf Wars, they each drop a piece of a mysterious vinyl record. Professor K says that the mysterious vinyl has the power to summon a demon. The GGs are joined by Combo and Cube, who explain that their hometown, Grind City, has been overtaken by the Rokkaku business conglomerate. They ask the GGs to help them to free their friend, Coin, who has been captured by the Kokaku. The Kokaku pursue the GGs and steal the vinyl record. Poison Jam explains that the CEO, Goji Rokkaku, plans to use the record to make a contract with the demon and take over the world. The GGs defeat Goji in the rooftop of his headquarters by destroying his turntable. Freedom is returned to the streets of Tokyoto. Kambo reveals that the Devil's Contract was an old record with no demonic powers, and that wealth had driven Goji to insanity. And all is well back in Tokyoto.
So speaking of records, let's talk about the music and sound. The Jet Set Radio original soundtrack was primarily written by Hideki Naganuma, with additional tracks by B.B. Wrights, Castle Logical, David Soul, F. Fields, Guitar Vader, Idle Taxi, Reps, Richard Jock, and Toronto. While developing the game, director Masayoshi Kikuchi wanted music that would sound energetic and rhythm-heavy while sounding both defiant and multicultural. A mixture of original and licensed tracks were used for the soundtrack, ranging from J-pop, hip-hop, funk, and electronic dance, to rock, acid jazz, and trip-hop. Naganuma's main goal in composing was to match the visual style and the overall atmosphere that the game created. To do this, he experimented with voices, cutting and rearranging samples to the point that they sometimes became nonsensical. Smilebit worked with Sega of America and Sega of Europe to include as many street culture elements as possible, in hopes of creating music that was acceptable to international audiences. This would result in different regional releases of the game having unique music added, with the North American and international version of the game featuring added heavy metal music.
The Jet Set Radio original soundtrack was distributed by Polydor Records on December 20th, 2000, in Japan, with 15 tracks for a total of 33 minutes, 25 seconds. For the HD release of Jet Set Radio, a new soundtrack was distributed by Something Else on September 18th, 2012, for North America and Europe. It contained additional tracks from the sequel, Jet Set Radio Future. Several tracks were omitted in this version of the soundtrack due to licensing reasons. A second soundtrack for the HD version, Jet Set Radio Sega Original Tracks, was distributed by Sega and released on iTunes on October 3rd, 2012. It contained revisited versions of the original 15 tracks. In January of 2016, a fan-made radio station website called Jet Set Radio Live was launched by the owner of the DJ Professor K Twitter account. The radio station features music from both Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future, as well as mashups, remixes, and music from outside sources. The website also features a public graffiti wall with custom images, public chat rooms, a TV section with different promotional videos, as well as a merchandise shop. Listeners can also tune into playlists of genre-specific music, including outer space, chiptunes, lo-fi, end of days, and retro remix. Summer, Halloween, Christmas, and Snowfi are also special limited time stations available throughout the year. Since its initial launch, the Jet Set Radio Live website has been shut down several times, although it is unknown whether it is for maintenance or copyright issues. Despite this, the DJ Professor K Twitter account posted an explanation of why the radio station shut down. In the story, DJ Professor K had to travel into the future after failing to save the world, sending back a robot to run the radio station. Since this return, the radio station had played continuously as of August 2021. And although not officially affiliated with the game, Naganuma does follow the radio station's official Twitter account.
Jet Set Radio was released in Japan on June 29, 2000. In North America, it was released on October 31st as Jet Grind Radio, due to trademark problems for Jet Set in the United States at the time. The PAL version was released later on November 24th under the original name. The North American and PAL versions contained two new maps, new songs, and other in-game content designed to increase the game's appeal to Western audiences. To promote the North American release, Sega of America held a Graffiti is Art competition for contestants to enter their own graffiti art pieces to Sega. Sega chose five finalists and flew them into San Francisco, California on October 21st, where they competed to make graffiti art pieces on a canvas within a 3.5-hour time frame for a prize of $5,000. Mayor of San Francisco Willie Brown discovered the competition and attempted to revoke Sega of America's permit, but was unsuccessful due to obtaining the permit legally. Sega re-released the game in Japan under the name De La Jet Set Radio. This version was released on October 18, 2001, in Japan via Dreamcast Direct, later renamed Sega Direct, and included a t-shirt featuring the protagonist Beat for those who pre-ordered. This version features content that was originally exclusive to PAL and North American versions, namely music, two playable characters, and two stages.
We also had a mobile version, which was Jet Set Radio remade as two 2D mobile games. The first, Typing Jet, a side-scrolling game in which players escape police, was released for Japanese mobile phones by Sega on June 22, 2001, very similar to that of like the Typing of the Dead, where you have to basically fill out these things to kind of complete your mission. And we had, as Derek had said, Jet Grind Radio, which was developed by Vicarious Visions, who previously developed the Game Boy Advance D-Makes for Tony Hawk Pro Skater and published by THQ. The game utilizes the same engine and isometric perspective as the Tony Hawk Pro Skater GBA titles. Despite the hardware limitations, cartoony graphics were designed to emulate the look of cel-shaded graphics. The music count was reduced from more than 21 to around 8, and the songs that remained were reduced to 30 to 45 second samples. The levels ranged from exact duplicates to reminiscent counterparts of the original Jet Set Radio. Soundtrack was developed by Sheenan and recreated 6 tracks from the original game into repeating 1-minute-long songs. And the game was released in North America on June 26, 2003, and in Europe on February 20, 2004, under the name of the original Dreamcast version, Jet Set Radio.
And there was a high-definition remaster, which was developed in 2012 by Blitworks, and was released for PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, Windows, PlayStation Vita, iOS, and Android. These ports add features including widescreen HD graphics, online leaderboards, achievements, and a new camera system. It combines the North American, European, and Japanese soundtracks and adds bonus tracks from Jet Set Radio Future, but omits the PAL tracks, Yappy Feet, and many styles. To promote the ports, Sega ran a contest to allow players to submit their own artwork to be used as graffiti within the game. On May 3, 2016, the game was made backwards compatible with the Xbox One. In North America, the PS3 version was released on September 18th, with PlayStation Plus members able to purchase it early on September 11th. The PS3 version was released in Europe the following day alongside the Xbox Live Arcade and Windows version for both North America and Europe. The PlayStation Vita version was scheduled for release on October 16th, but was delayed for development optimization reasons. It was eventually released on November 20th in North America and in Europe the following day. The PS3, Xbox 360, and PlayStation Vita versions were released in Japan simultaneously on February 20th, 2013. The iOS and Android versions were released in North America and Europe on November 29th, 2012. Japan received the iOS and Android versions on December 20th, 2012, and January 30th, 2013, respectively. The smartphone versions were delisted as of 2015 due to compatibility problems with the updating OS systems for iOS.
Jet Set Radio received acclaim for its gameplay, visual style, and music. Gamers Republic called it flawless. IGN praised the extra gameplay modes, saying they added replay value. Official Dreamcast Magazine, or as we all knew it, ODCM, found the exaggerated physics and interactivity of the levels immersive. DC UK described the gameplay as a combination of Crazy Taxi and Tony Hawk and concluded that the gameplay was better than both. GameSpot praised the pacing, stating that the beginning of the game is simple and slowly becomes more challenging as the player progresses. GameFan was not impressed with the early stages, but their opinion changed as they progressed the game and were happy with the end result. Next Generation found the story modifications of the English version jarring, although he complimented the new stages, calling them impressive, and a worthy addition to Japanese cityscapes of the original. The camera controls were commonly criticized, but most reviewers felt the overall quality outweighed them. In regards to the visual style, IGN said it looks like a moving cartoon, and every character, right down to the police dogs, is practically overflowing with personality. It has the type of look that makes non-gamers unable to be nothing but impressed. ODCM, as we all knew it, called it gorgeous and compared it to the move to color television. DC UK also praised it for resembling 2D cartoon and 3D at the same time and considered it groundbreaking. GamePro wrote that the visuals were one of a kind and that the stylized design was convincing and fun to look at.
When reviewing the music, GamePro called Jet Set Radio one of the best sounding games of the year, and ODCM said it had one of the best soundtracks ever. IGN also praised the soundtrack, but was critical of the tracks added to the North American release, in particular songs from Rob Zombie. Next Generation, however, didn't consider the new tracks to make a difference, stating the soundtrack was incredible from the start. GameSpot felt the soundtrack fit perfectly into the game's environment. When reviewing the HD remaster, the game received mixed reactions from critics. GamesRadar Plus praised how it is a joy to play even after 12 years since its release. Eurogamer also gave positive statements, calling the visual style timeless, and complimented the HD remaster, stating, 12 years on and this is a surprisingly rigorous game built of oddball delights. Then, and the HD updating has only enhanced its charms. The skating's still great, the city's still a joy to explore, and the soundtrack's still one of the very best ever put together. Game Informer was more critical, opining that the gameplay was archaic and frustrating. Game Informer further elaborated that in retrospect, the original release visual style blinded them from its faulty gameplay. Both Touch Arcade and Pocket Gamer criticized smartphone versions for the touchscreen controls and inability to keep up with the tasks the game requires.
Across all versions of the game, including the original and re-releases, sales of Jet Set Radio surpassed 1 million copies worldwide. Jet Set Radio is recognized as one of the first games to feature cel-shaded graphics, with exaggerated shapes, thick lines, and flat, bright colors. In 2009, an early antagonist in the game, Captain Onishima, was ranked 95th in IGN's top 100 video game villains list. Insomniac owner Ted Price credited Jet Set Radio as an influence on their game, Sunset Overdrive. Numerous indie developers have cited Jet Set Radio as a major influence on their games as well, the most notable being the successfully crowdfunded Hover, Revolt of Gamers, Lethal League, and the upcoming Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, all of which draw heavy inspiration from Jet Set Radio's visuals and music and feature contributions from Jet Set Radio composer Hideki Naganuma. The game has also had a speedrun at Games Done Quick multiple times. Other notable fan community-based Jet Set Radio projects have been Jet Set Radio Live, a 24/7 browser-based radio station, based on the fictional radio station in-game created in January 2016, and the album Memories of Tokyoto by American musician Too Mellow, released February 20th, 2018. As we have said, a sequel, Jet Set Radio Future, was released for the Xbox in 2002, early in the system's life cycle. Two main characters, Beat and Gum, appear as playable characters in the games Sega Superstars Tennis and Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. And the former also made an appearance in Archie Comics' Sonic Universe Issue 45, an adaptation of the game along with Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing. Jet Set Radio, as we all keep asking, has been requested to be added to the Xbox One, the Xbox Series XS, and of course, the system that needs it the most, the Nintendo Switch.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So yeah, Jet Set Radio, again, is one of those cult classics, as I said at the top of the episode, that just keeps getting legs. It's one of those games that did all right. I think people were very shocked and had loved the idea of cel shading. I mean, we love to see it in like Borderlands and other games that have attempted this. And it is just so cool to see this kind of niche skating slash anti-establishment game really keep growing legs.
Yeah, and the cel shading, I think, is really the biggest influence on games of the future. I mean, obviously, there's been spiritual successors. We mentioned Sunset Overdrive. But, you know, that cel shading style is still something that really pops and really, I think, can, back then, gave a very unique visual style and now sort of gives that unique visual style, but also sort of can mask, like, maybe making up for lesser graphics and things like that. You know, I think about games like Crackdown, and obviously there's games like Borderlands where it's very stylized and it's perfect for a game like that. Of course, you've got like Legend of Zelda Wind Waker.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very unique, great art style for the Legend of Zelda series. So just so many games that have taken that art style influence. And on top of that, I think that there was some influence for games that we didn't mention. I think Tony Hawk is an obvious thing that we have to talk about, especially when it comes to the graffiti. If you haven't played Jet Set Radio and you just want to watch some of the gameplay, there's obviously a big emphasis on doing the graffiti and tagging walls and other various things. Tony Hawk went on to add that in Tony Hawk's Underground 2, where you can have your own custom tagging. I think it's also in Tony Hawk's American Wasteland, where you can just kind of do your own little graffiti on the wall. It's not the main emphasis of the game, but it is a little bit of an addition to, I think, emphasize that sort of counterculture vibe that comes along with skateboarding, you know, and then this like street style skating, this inline skating thing that Jet Set Radio did. You know, I think there's also a lot of similarities within another Dreamcast title, which was Sonic Adventure.
Ooh, yeah.
And especially, you know, Sonic Adventure 2. I see a lot of similarities within these games and especially within the soundtrack. The soundtrack of Jet Set Radio, lots of like that sort of like metal, that hip hop, you know, that sort of vibe that, I don't know, it's like a fast paced feeling. But it's also something that doesn't overtake you as like overly intense or energizing or anything like that.
Yeah, it's those like high BPMs, but that like works so well with the environment that you're in, where like you may be getting hit like those really high ones, and then you bring some like acid jazz in that kind of like mellows this out. And it's this really good dichotomy of music in both games that do it so well that just resonate. All those, like in both games, the music really resonates to your soul. You feel it. Like you feel when you're playing it. And like it really enhances these games that overall are pretty simplistic in a way of what you're doing. But both games, visually, sound wise, like did it so well to just like suck you into it.
And I don't think that there's a game that really, like this style, all the characters' styles, I think really represents that era that it came out in a way that other mm-hmm. video games don't, because those games just like the oversized, like the baggy pants, the like, you know, yeah. the big like glasses, just that, that entire vibe, even the bright colors and things like that. I mean, when I think about the 2000s and fashion and style, I mean, it does such a great job taking that real life style and putting it in a video game, where a lot of video games were, you know, if they were bright colors, they were more within that side-scrolling 8-bit, think the original Sonic game or its sequels. The rest of the games were like this darker, you know, sort of like even the Tony Hawk games is another reference. It's like just jeans, a gray t-shirt, maybe a backpack or something. But the graphics don't pop in the way that Jet Set Radio did.
Yeah, and I think it's really the establishment of that time of like, hey, we don't want to go that anime manga route that Sega's been trying to push with this. And, you know, a lot of these people joining us are like, we like Sonic. Sonic was different. It didn't try and do those art styles. And that's what, like, especially in like the Saturn and Dreamcast era, where you had like Shenmue and you had these other ones that were taking like that anime feel to Japanese culture. They're like, hey, what if we switch it up and we do like our own thing? That we're still in Tokyo. Like, we're in this like futuristic Tokyo space that we've made, but we don't have to just take from an anime style. We don't have to do that. We can make our own. And so with that cell shading, the idea of like those big clunky lines, and it really lends itself to graffiti, which is typically like bubbly letters and kind of like very colorful and punchy and kind of in your face with those styles. Like, that's what they really did with that cell shading. And it really complemented that idea of like these rival gangs of, you know, taggers that are going out to do this. It made us such a cool world with it. And then gameplay-wise, just to jump over to that real quick, it felt as polished, if not more, than Tony Hawk in some of those areas when it came to like hitting a grind into multiple tricks, into jumping from like a rooftop to another area. It just felt more satisfying. And less in the realism that Tony Hawk did, which is more of what they tried to do in a way. It definitely wasn't real what they were doing, but that realism of feeling like a skateboarder versus just like an insane inline skater tagging.
Right. Because the tricks that you're doing in Jet Set Radio, it's like you're jumping up a rail, and it's sort of like these big lofty jumps that you can do. And when you're doing the jumps in Tony Hawk, or like grinding on a rail, it's very fast. It's very like quick, which is how skateboarding really is. You know, if you watch a skateboarding video, like, yeah, you might get the occasional grind down a really long set of stairs or something. And that's sort of like them pushing the limits of that. But for the most part, in street style skating, you were just sort of like hopping up. It's concrete, so a lot of friction. And you're just sort of like almost coming to a stop, and then you're hopping off and skating forward again. So it's got a lot more of that, I think, slow pace to it. And Jet Set Radio, it's not particularly like, I want to say overly slow, but that loft that you feel sort of gives it like this more weightless energy than Tony Hawk did. And Tony Hawk, love Tony Hawk, very classic soundtrack as well. Obviously a very cool era of, I think, just overall life where skateboarding was sort of like this big over the top thing, you know, and Tony Hawk really brought all that to the forefront. Having something like this too, that I think just delivers its own world, its own style, was something that I think they had to be pretty brave to do. And the fact that, you know, it really didn't carry on too much beyond that one sequel, I think is reminiscent of that, that it was sort of a capture within a moment, that it wasn't like trying to emulate this evolving thing in real life like skateboarding sort of is.
Yeah, and I think it did exactly what it was set out to do. And going to like that movement, it almost felt like a platformer that you just constantly moved on.
Yeah.
Like that lofty jump feels like the typical platformers like Banjo-Kazooie, a little bit like Mario 64, anything like that was like a little bit of a loftier jump. You felt that, but it still felt so good to do. So I'm really glad that we were able to like jump into this cult classic. And so we've been talking about it a lot in our posts. But Derek, let the people know, why overall did we choose this and what do you think of it?
I think for its uniqueness and its influence on, I think, the art style of future releases is why we absolutely had to talk about this game. The cel shading was revolutionary. You know, doing the things that they did with the intent that they did, where they were saying, you know, we want to make sure that this can't be replicated with the current technology. We want to push the Dreamcast and really see what we can get out of it, was a very interesting, unique approach to take. I think that looking at an overall soundtrack ushered in a new era of soundtracks. We had some great soundtracks in the 2000s that followed Jet Set Radio. I don't know how much of an influence Jet Set was in particular on that, but I think that there was a really great emphasis placed on that in the 2000s. Really, really fun game for me. Carries a lot of that old arcade-y style of games where we sort of saw this transition into where some of the games were becoming more story-oriented. This game sort of has that as a baseline, but overall it's arcade-y fun still, like classic video games were. For me, it's like a 7.5 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Arcade-y. It has that little bit of story to drive you along, just to give you an emphasis of what's going on, but it's not a main driving component at all. It's just to continue you from like one point to the next, give you a little of interest, give you a reason of like why there's a bad guy, why the city's set up like this. I think it's done so well. So if I had to give it a rating, I would give it probably like the coolness factor of who you are if you do inline skate just everywhere. I think that should make a comeback. That should be a major mode of transportation, because it's the future. As we all knew in the 2000s, inline skates were the future of everything. We should bring the future back. Bring back those styles of soundtrack as well.
Give me a Brink remake.
Oh, you got to give it to me. You got to bring it back.
Give me a Brink remake. Give me, I mean, Venice Beach is like the only place that you ever see anybody roller skating in media anymore. Let's bring it back.
Bring it back.
Barbie movie. Set the trend. Let's roll it back.
Exactly. Bring it back out of 10 is what I will go ahead and give it.
Well, great. This has been really fun. You know, shout out to research assistance from Evan Barr on this one. And, you know, this was a fun one to talk about it. I like doing these little mini episodes with you.
Yeah, it's been great. I love doing like jumping into these, be able to talk more about like the passion projects that maybe don't have a lot of data that we can pull from, but that have just been such cool games and cool influences. I really appreciate it. Let us know on our next ones, any games you guys want to cover, any topics that are coming up, and we'll catch you on the, as we say in the 2000s, the old flippity-floppity.